listens to the show and is a beer lover like I am. What is happening is Smithsonian is actually hiring a beer curator. So they're giving somebody, it's a 3-year deal. So you make $64,000 every year, and you are a beer curator. So that involves, you know, everything from the aspects of the brewing process, but also the history of it. And it sounds like a pretty amazing job that many people would be interested in. So if you go to careers at Smithsonian, you could be a beer curator.
I'd like to be a beer curator.
Yeah, drink. I'm sure there's a lot of R&D in that.
That's
a lot of research.
That sounds like fun. So here's the situation. We have bad traffic outside, not immediately outside, but in the vicinity. So On the Town, Mikey D is coming your way later tonight. It's just that no one has been able to get here yet. Our time is done, so we got to skedaddle. We got a date at the bar.
Right.
Or not with each other, but with beer and the bar. So what we're going to do is we're going to let our most professional DJ, Mr. Rick Deckard, take things over for a little while here on WMFO Medford. But do stick around if you are a fan of On the Town, Mikey D. It will be coming up shortly. It should be on in just a few minutes. So stick around. Enjoy your night. Next week, we will be back. Let's see. I got to do the thing here, which is, man, I haven't done this in a while. Nope, not that. Oh, I pressed that button.
Yeah, having you have to do anything more than what you already had to do with our show.
No, you know what the problem is? They've made it super simple, and I'm used to the old complicated way of doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm still like looking for the complicated buttons, which I don't have to press anymore. But anyway, we will be back next week, 7 to 9. Don't forget, Time Travel with Chris Earle leading us in every Wednesday, 5 to 7. Awesome show. Hope you check that out. And once again, On the Town, Mikey D will be on tonight. It is just delayed. It will be coming on the air soon. Stick around. Enjoy some music from our great friend Rick Deckard. Until next time, Lisa Nichols.
Lovely as always.
And I am Derek Gary. Stay safe, everybody.
Simple and free. Everybody loves to cha-cha-cha. Little children like to cha-cha-cha. They like to cha-cha-cha. They like to cha-cha-cha. Ooh, everybody likes to cha-cha-cha. Took my baby to the hop last night, and what to my surprise, when we got there, she hit me with the news right between the eyes. Yeah, she said she couldn't do the cha-cha-cha. She said she couldn't do the cha-cha-cha. She couldn't, no, she couldn't cha-cha-cha. Ooh, my baby couldn't do the cha-cha-cha. I told her not to worry, they'd play some other dance. But we sat there for an hour and a half, and we never got a chance. For every song they played was the cha-cha-cha. Every song they played was the cha-cha-cha. Tom Dooley, Chief Latoon, cha-cha-cha. Ooh, every number was the cha-cha-cha. I told her not to worry, there's only one thing we can do. Baby, if you let me take you by the hand, I'm gonna teach this dance to you. Then I told her, baby, back now, that's right, turn now, just cross now. Ooh. I taught my baby how to cha-cha-cha. Kept on dancing, and was I surprised, for you see, after we practiced for a little while, she was doing it better than me. Now my baby loves to do the cha-cha-cha. Ooh, she loves to do the cha-cha-cha. She likes the cha-cha-cha. Ooh, she likes the cha-cha-cha. Ooh, everybody likes the cha-cha-cha. They do it one, two, cha-cha-cha. All right, one, two, cha-cha-cha. And up now, cha-cha-cha. All right, back now, all right, baby, let's cross now, and turn now.
Oh yeah. said and done, that a boy was born to read in 1961 and lived 100 years by 1996. Who's ever gonna notice that it all came down to this?
And you are listening to WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM and WMFO.org on the web. Tufts Freeform and Educational Radio.
desperado. Why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking. Your prison is what world all alone. Don't your feet get cold in the wintertime? The sky won't snow and the sun won't shine. It's hard to tell the nighttime from the day. You're losing all your highs and lows. Ain't it funny how the feeling goes away? Maybe raining, but there's a rainbow above you. You better let somebody love you.
Let somebody love you.
You better let somebody love you before it's too
me down. get a power increase, and we should get a better lease. Everybody would hear us then at 91.5 FM. It would be so awesome. Everybody would hear us.
On the Town with Mikey D. It's a little late. I can't control traffic. What can I do? You know, the only thing I can do is start the show right off the bat. Here's some petty morals.
statutes.
Ah, yes.
Okay,
on the Town with Mikey D, my name is Phil. We're just going to get right into it. We have some people here already. Thank you for being so patient, I got to say.
We're sedated.
You're sedated?
We're sedated, yeah.
Well, the AC's running. I mean, if we're really quiet, you can hear it running in the background.
It's a comforting sound.
Yes.
I see 5,000 BTUs of power over in that window unit.
Yeah.
So, introduce yourselves to everyone in Radioland.
Okay.
If I recall, it's again, because you've been here many times.
We have. Well,
yes.
I've been here. Both of us. I've played in the studio, the other studio.
Oh, you've been in Studio D.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Been in Studio D. Yep. With the D.
With D. Nice.
D.
Yes. Well, okay.
To my left is Eleanor Ramsey, the founder... The foundry of Boston Rock Opera. And I'm Russ Gershon, and I'm participating as a musician in our upcoming production.
Yeah, I've been seeing this all over Facebook, I gotta say.
Oh, good. That means we're getting somewhere.
Yes, you're getting somewhere. Money well spent, if you will.
It's just time.
Which is money. It's Facebook.
No, we haven't spent any money on this. This is all seriously.
I know. I joke.
Not that we're not going to. We're not.
I joke. A lot of people spend money to promote on Facebook. It shows up on my feed. I have to appreciate it because, you know, some of them are paying really good money for me to see that. So
it's sort of that's the model. You know, it's like yeah. sort of if you're running a page and trying to promote something, they're gonna throttle it if you don't give them a little something. Oh, I gotta talk closer to the
yes.
mic.
Yes,
okay.
yes.
I mean,
they could hear you, but they kind of hear you with all of the room,
all the
in
other
the background.
Sounds. I'll right.
you know
just
what I mean.
Eat the mic. I'll eat the mic like I used to. So
there
but,
you go.
Yeah.
yes, but it's part of a good diet.
Yes, eating mics. This is a good, healthy-looking windscreen you got
yes.
here.
They even have very lovely Sennheiser headphones
oh, yeah,
here, too.
Oh, yeah, I guess that would help. Then I could actually hear myself.
Yeah, uh-oh.
It's been a while. All right, now we're ready to go.
So what are we doing here?
Yeah,
again?
Yeah. What is Boston Rock Opera doing here?
We are here to promote our show. We are doing Stardust to Black Star, The Lives of David Bowie. So we are going to be taking over once for two nights next weekend on August 6th and 7th.
Once being a venue.
Once ballroom. Which is in, 156 Highland Ave in Somerville.
Yes.
And we're going to be there for two nights, and we are doing The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and The Spiders from Mars in its entirety, and that's going to be led by Mick Mondo and a crackerjack crew.
I'm looking at a list of everyone here.
It's a big list.
Like, our producer Joel.
Yes,
who's not here tonight, but he will be there.
We hope so. Yes, indeed.
He's,
yes,
he's playing keys. He's playing yes. keys. I'm looking at the list just of the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. I have to say the whole title.
Yes.
I'm saying, Mark Sharon from Hurt Smile and Slipkid and Flesh and all those bands that he's been
awesome.
In over the years.
He's an awesome player.
Peter Moore. From Count Zero. John Powhida needs no explanation.
he might need an explanation, but he needs no introduction.
That's right.
Well, anybody who's been in and around the Boston music scene knows who John Powhida is.
Absolutely.
That is true. And he's coming. He's worked with us before, so it's fun
yes.
to have him come back and do this. Yep. Bunch of this great, awesome people.
Yeah. I'm just looking at that band right now. I mean, we'll get into the other ones. But... So they're just going to do the whole album front to back?
They're going to do it front to back. Mondo's going to lead the band and tell his story of how this album comes together. And they sound awesome, and it's going to be great. So it's like lots of special... We got a bunch of special vocalists coming on. So
yeah, I mentioned a few of them.
We've got twins. So,
Glow Twins.
Yes, we have twins. So it's,
not the Glimmer Twins.
No.
No, but...
They were busy.
I can only imagine the Glimmer Twins singing David Bowie. You know, that is actually almost something I would like to say.
That's not
Why
out
not?
Of the realm of possibility.
Right.
True.
I'm sure they...
So, yeah, so...
I'm sure they had their moments of singing together.
True. No, so... Like you said, it's over two nights, and there's three acts.
each, yeah, so you're going to, if you come, you'll see all three acts.
Okay, I was wondering if it was going to break down from,
nope,
we're gonna, all right, that's way too much mic for you. You need to go on a diet.
Okay.
So it's going to be all three acts in the same night.
Same show, both nights.
So you get to see the whole thing. So you can you can go Friday and see something else. Come Saturday and Sunday, and you can see the whole thing twice. Because once you come once, you're going to definitely want to come together.
And the whole thing, in short, is Ziggy Stardust in its entirety, and then Black Star in its entirety. And then
that's it. That is going to be an interesting thing, because
it's a premiere. No one's
yeah. If I recall, it's only been done, kind of, not like as an album, but as an off-Broadway show.
Right. Well, actually, Lazarus. Lazarus and Black Star aren't the same, because Lazarus has a couple songs from Black Star.
Yeah.
But also a lot of other Bowie songs, because I looked at the whole listing of it. It's really, but he chose.
I knew that.
So he chose through his catalog.
Kind of the nucleus of Lazarus was the Black Star.
They overlap.
Right. They overlap, but there's actually a lot of stuff from his other records, including some of his more recent records that's in Lazarus. And then Black Star is, except for two songs, is a completely different record than Lazarus is as a play. But I first heard about Lazarus, back in December, I was reading a little bit about it, and I was really intrigued by it, and I kind of thought, well, okay, I knew that Bowie was going to have a record coming out, and I thought, wow, he's really on a creative roll, and
album that he put out a couple years before.
Well, the one before, and I kind of thought, wow, but it seemed like, at least in my mind, I was sort of thinking, well, isn't it interesting, though, he's getting other people to sort of play for him, like he had, Michael C. Hall sing Lazarus on the Colbert Report, and it was really great, and I was just like, so I kind of thought, well, what's Bowie up to here, is he, kind of letting someone else play him, and that's what he said. He's like, oh, he's not doing interviews. And I thought, well, he's just making it more mysterious for us. He didn't really tell anybody what was really going on. And then, of course, when the album dropped, it was sort of like almost like afraid to hear it, almost afraid to listen to it, because it was such a heavy piece.
The two songs that he put out before the album came out were really heavy, really dark and really videos morbid.
The videos are, hard to look at, and then suddenly they're like really hard to look at, and
now they're really they're almost impossible to watch.
Yeah,
but Black Star isn't all a dark record.
No, it's not. It's really only the first half.
It's got a little
levity on side two,
and it sort of dissolves into lightness at the end.
So it has
humor. It plays a lot. He sort of plays a lot with in this sonically. You can hear things from his sort of whole catalog in there. None of it's real obvious, but
it's not.
It's in there.
Yeah. No, I see the band you have set up for Black Star.
Well, this is where I'll let Russ take
over. Okay, Russ takes over here.
One of the first things I had to do is talk Russ into doing this, because I couldn't have possibly thought of, we couldn't have possibly done it without Russ. I mean, because as soon as I heard the record and the thought was like maybe BRO could possibly, get together and put this on, I was just like, well, if Russ says yes, maybe. If not, then it's not going to go anywhere.
The reason being that it's such a jazzy album with so much prominent saxophone on it, and even the other instruments are being played in a somewhat non-rock way some of the time, and I'm a saxophonist.
A lot of it is very jazz-oriented.
Yeah, and
like we all said, it kind of picks up on the second half, but the first three songs or so are very...
They're jazz players. It's not jazz per se.
Well, jazz players play on the album.
Yeah, the band is they're all like certifiable jazz players.
Certifiable.
And you got to be certifiable.
Yeah, I think you do.
And so that's.
Well, you're tackling Bowie. You have to be certifiable.
And tackling jazz.
Right. And so I'm a saxophonist and an arranger, and I have a band in town here called the Either Orchestra, which has been around for 30 years now.
Yeah.
And I'm where I arrange the music and so on. And so and and um, Eleanor became aware that I'm a real Bowie head when he died, and I wound up writing a kind of a eulogy that I put on Facebook, and she realized, oh, he loves Bowie, and he's also the jazz dude. So so she said, you got to do this, and I was like, because it was so new, and it was, there was just, I know some of the guys on the record, I've played with them, and I just felt like I didn't really want to wade into that record. And then I thought about it, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And so I put together a band of people who had never played together before. I hardly any of them. Two of them knew each other, but basically it's like a sort of a band that appeared out of thin air.
Right. Wow.
And,
all right.
And then added on a five-voice backup singing chorus, because Bowie does so much multi-track vocals on there. There's a lot of vocal texture. So we have this seven-piece band and a five-piece backup singing chorus plus lead singers, and it's been really fun. It's been fun kind of reverse engineering the album to try to figure out how to make it work.
So I got to say that as someone who is putting together that ensemble, which song off the album has been the most difficult for you to get through?
Well, I guess you'd have to say Black Star, just because it's long. Black Star is really two songs in one.
That's like a big 9-minute track.
It's a big 9-minute track. It's kind of like song A, then song B inserted into the middle, and then it goes back to song A in a somewhat transformed way at the end. Okay. So getting the transitions and the different tempos and just getting it, it's that one's, but they all have their quirks, and they're Bowie is really brilliant at making things sound simple that are complicated, and making things sound complicated that are simple. And so it always takes a while to sort of unravel how his songs work. So they all have their challenges, really.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at the musicians that you assembled for the Black Star thing, and
they're from some. I mean, Phil Aiken, who plays keyboards, is a real man around town on the rock scene. He plays in the hot stove cool music thing always, and he's done lots of other things. Albino MBA, which is the unpronounceable name there, is a fantastic guitar player and singer from Mozambique, who is a big rising star in Africa, who happens to be living here now. He went to Berkeley for a while.
Oh.
And wonderful guitar player and singer. And so he's on board. And Greg Lohman is a great player on the jazz scene, but also a fantastic rock player, too. Okay. And I could go on and on. Club Delph, you know the band Club Delph? Paul Schultes, the other keyboard player.
I haven't heard that name in quite a while.
Well, they're still at it, and Paul Schultes is a regular member of that floating ensemble. And we have a singer named Ron Murphy, who's a really great jazz blues singer with a deep voice, who sort of an unexpected person to be doing this, and he didn't know Bowie's music well before, but I've worked with him, and I thought he could do. So he's singing Lazarus and the middle part of Black Star. It's a real sort of odd aggregation of people, but it's really clicked together. Everybody's really put a lot into it.
Right.
Yeah, I heard a rehearsal last night, and it's pretty amazing. And it's amazing when you hear these different vocalists take on these songs, and like someone like Ron, who's so different from Bowie, and yet he brings like it just like, yeah, this sounds completely the way it's supposed to sound. I mean, he brings this amazing emotion to the songs. And then, you know, we also have Gene Dante on, and, you know, he just hits his song. I mean, you could close your eyes and almost channel Bowie right there with Gene. And it's like you have, you know...
I mean, I'm pretty sure Gene has been made fun of for sounding too much like Bowie.
Well, hey, you know, if that's what they're going to make fun of you for, then, let him go at it.
Mockery is the sincerest form of flattery or something
that. Well, it's better than like, you know, you sound too much like the guy in Air Supply. Now, that would be a problem.
That would be right. It's like, oh, you have the vocal passion and range of David Bowie. Oh, you know, slap.
Yeah, exactly. F you,
But no,
we have two female singers taking over two of the songs. Linda Viennes from many, many bands over the years.
Electric and Kingdom of Love is her Kingdom current of, thing.
Right. Yep. And Tira Penn, who's a sort of a jazz, I wouldn't call her a jazz singer. She's, but she theatrical jazz singer who, from Worcester, and who I work with, and I thought she could do Sue very well. Sue is almost like a spoken word thing, very dramatic, and she does a beautiful job with it. And so it's a lot of different sort of angles into that album.
Nice. Well, after, you know, Spiders from Mars and Black Star, you know, the big kind of glammy thing of Spiders from Mars,
right.
And then the real dark darkness of Black Star.
Then we have to go back. Right, then we have to bring it back
up
again.
Bring it back up.
And which is why we go back to High Energy Bowie, and we have another band, which is like a different crew of people, also really, you know, pretty known in the scene and really out there doing all kinds of stuff. As you know.
Yeah,
doing a sort of a grab bag of hits,
like Bowie hits,
right? Yeah, and you know, so of course, in that one's. Wait a minute.
That's the wrong page.
That's the wrong
page. He's got
page.
The page.
Yeah, he's got the page.
No, it's the back
people.
Of this one.
Yeah. I'm just looking to see who some of the
No, it's such a such a long list of performers that even the executive producer doesn't have it quite memorized.
Right. Well, I know. It's amazing. Well, Matt Sullivan is music directing that section, and Clinton Deegan is like playing keys and guitar with him, and he's also going to be, he's an amazing guy. He's going to be doing some music directing for us
in the fall. The next thing I'm playing is his band, Body English.
Cool.
So.
Well, that's awesome. And of course, Melissa Gibbs is on this, and Andrea Gillis, Rod Van Stoley is singing on it.
Rod Van...
Simon Mullins, who has worked with us before, and also with the URO, and he's come back to us, so he's going to be singing.
And he gets a really good song.
And he does get a really good song, which...
Wait, Rod?
Well, they're all really good songs.
They're all good songs. I mean,
of course.
We aren't doing any of the songs.
Simon gets the
kind of, in a way,
the song.
But we're not going to tell you what it is.
Damn it! I was about to ask that.
You just have to figure out what would be the song.
The song. Oh, jeez.
The song.
You don't want to ask me that.
Everybody can have their own the song out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody in Radio Land just. Concentrate on Bowie and think about what the song is.
I mean, for me, it's Dead Man Walking, and I'm pretty much guaranteed
it's not that.
That's not going to be playing.
Probably not that one.
But, I mean, producer Joel Simkus is also a big Bowie fan. We've had many discussions about Bowie, and we particularly like his late 90s period.
Really?
I've been listening to...
It's an underrated era of
outside... Like, you know, I mean,
outside
I was and, listening to
Earthling
that, and Earthling and yeah. just listening
and
to
Hours,
those,
right?
And just sort of like kind of giving them when Bowie passed away, like I couldn't really listen to a lot of it was hard to listen to Black Star. It was hard to listen to a lot of the early stuff. It was just kind of emotional. So I was like, okay, I'll listen to some of this '90s stuff that I haven't never really gave that much of a chance to. And it was just, you know, so that was kind of. Then I'll work my way back.
Well, it was his era, because that's kind of where I became a Bowie fan. Was ironically the Tin Machine album.
Well, that's amazing, and that's great. That's
finally,
great,
somebody.
You know? That's what I've been saying for that first Tin Machine album.
What
people are like, oh, people just want to poo-poo all over it. I'm like, no. All right. It's 25 years after the fact. Listen to it now and see it and hear how it stands up.
It actually stands up really well.
And
I think people just weren't
one,
quite sure. I like the first Tin Machine two, yeah.
But that was the beginning of his kind of rebuilding his creativity.
Right. After his superstar phase.
Right. He did a pop star phase.
So then
and
he's
now
like,
he's,
now I want to be a singer in a band with like, you
yeah.
know.
With people, with equal say.
Right,
and, yeah.
right. And I mean, you know, he met Reeves in Boston. I mean,
yeah.
He met, you know, Reeves was from Boston and you know, worked in record
right.
stores.
Yeah.
So with Reeves and Mick used to work together. So,
oh, yeah?
So, you know, so wow. that's the other thing that came up in conversation a lot is how Bowie was, he sort of brought people together. You know, he was always looking for talent and he was always kind of looking for the unknown and plucking people out of obscurity and having them, you know, join his bands.
Oh, absolutely.
Him. Right.
Which is amazing.
And he really, you know, the consensus seems to be that he was a genuinely good guy and not an asshole.
Yeah.
And it's so great to when one of your heroes actually turns out to be not an asshole. Not
yeah.
That's not an FCC word quite.
Yeah.
It's on
one.
The edge. Not a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, that everybody really loved him and considered him you know, he had some years in the 70s that everybody was a little crazy then. Right. But
that's how they cocaine.
Yes. People seem to love him enough to forgive him for that.
For that, right, exactly.
And he forgave himself.
Another great thing I read was from maybe it was Dennis Davis, who also recently died too, the great drummer, who talked about the sort of family of musicians who had played with Bowie over the decades and how they all considered themselves to be a brother or sisterhood. Even the ones that hadn't played together
for a while.
They had been in different eras. Oh, right. They all considered themselves part of like an extended family. Mm-hmm. And like when a younger drummer went into the band later, he sought out Dennis and talked to him, and Dennis gave him a lot of good information. And it was just like there's a spirit of generosity among the musicians that worked with Bowie. And it always comes down from the top.
Well, and by the end, like, he was still working with musicians that he had been working with for decades.
Right.
I think the only one that held out from the last couple was Reeves.
Yeah. Mm. Well.
I mean, not much more to say about that.
Right.
A lot of the people that played on his last tours in 2003 and 2004 came back.
Right. Earl Slick was on that tour, and Mike Garzon was always in and out of the band.
Yeah, and Gail Ann Dorsey.
Yes, that's right.
Sterling Campbell, the drummer.
Right.
You know, they all came back and played on the next day. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, when I found out that you guys were doing this Bowie thing, and then you're coming in here, I'm like, oh my God, I can geek out. and you know, did marvel about the first Tin Machine album. And I mean, that's not going to get played during the dance band set either.
No, of course, people are like, well, are we doing anything from Tin Machine? And, you know, it's like, you have to make a special night about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's a huge body of work, and so much of it is really good. You know, it's worth examining, and we have maybe close to 30 songs in this evening, and that's going to be a long night of music.
Oh,
that's for the
is.
Hardcore people only, and that's 30 songs out of, you know, how many, 500 songs or something out there?
Yeah, easily something like that. But I saw that. I saw the last act. I'm like, okay, they're going to do a bunch of Bowie hits. It's not going to be any of my favorites, but it will be a great time.
It probably won't.
I've always been an album guy. Mm-hmm. I always liked that.
It's the obscure.
On the CD, it's always track 8. On a 10-song record, it's track 8. That's my favorite song, generally.
When I was, you know, working on figuring out how to arrange Black Star for the band, and I'm like, oh, this is such a heavy album. And I was like, I've got to squeeze in a couple of my old Bowie favorites into our set. I was like, Eleanor, can we do just a couple at the end of Black Star just to lift things up? And she was like, okay. And so and then I started thinking about
Black Star is going to end, and you're going to kind of transition into the All-Star Act.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, so I get 2 songs here. And I looked at the list of what had already been taken, and I was like, oh God, what am I going to do? Let's do that one. I'd start to, no, but let's do this. That was torture to just pick out 2.
Oh yeah, and every time we were trying to get the list of the songs, and I would put things down, like the list was just being like, every time we were working on like a joint document, and every time I'd write my favorites, and I was trying to get some stuff. I wanted something from the 90s. I wanted something from the aughts. You know, so I was trying to, and I would put
it's kind of hard to find hits from the 90s and the aughts.
And then it's kind of like, then other people would be like, they wouldn't really feel comfortable playing those songs. So then that would, like, it would disappear off the list, and, you know, I'd put it back on. So there was a lot of shifting and changing, and it comes down to, you know, kind of what people want to play and what they, and also deciding to make it kind of, you know, upbeat and fun and familiar, because we've given them something very intense, and we want them to go home.
And Black Star in the Middle is sort of that's like the kind of heavy, dark, you know, nougaty interior of the show, and so
and it's something you're not going to see anywhere else.
No one. Anyone who is going to this show, I'm sorry for talking over you. Anyone that's going to this show is going to just be completely drained by the end of it.
Right.
I can just feel it right now. That, I mean, knowing the Ziggy Stardust record, knowing the Black Star record, you're gonna need that levity at the end.
Totally.
So.
Right. That's right. Russ, as he put it, he's like, you got to give them cookies before you send them to bed.
Yes. That's the perfect analogy for that. Oh my God, yeah.
Well, I had this experience years ago playing in Orchestra Morphine after Mark Sandman died.
Yes,
he was,
okay.
I was a frequent collaborator of his. And I was on the tour for that year after he died. We were playing his last album, the last Morphine album, The Night, which was a very dark, you know, another one of those like Voice from Beyond. And we were going around the country and we'd come out and for the first half of the show, like these audiences would be looking like they were at a wake, you know.
Mm.
And then finally we could like sort of rouse them into something by the end. But that experience of like people needing to mourn, and I think there'll be a little bit of that with this. This is a little different because Bowie is an uber personality, whereas the Morphine, it's a little more cultish.
Yeah, definitely.
But that idea that you're going to this dark place as a catharsis with the audience really made me feel like we have to lift them up at the end. It's just it's essential.
No, it only makes sense. I mean, you'll have to have Ashes to Ashes and have to have Let's Dance and have to have Modern Love. Oh, you have the songs there? Do you have the songs there? I'm not, I can't read it.
They are here.
Well, I'm still not going to ask. And I'm probably wrong on at least one of those that I just said.
Probably wrong on at least one. But that's the thing. It's like, of all the songs you could do, there's a whole lot of other songs you could also do.
I was just trying to think of like the big ones, you know, Ashes to Ashes, Let's Dance, Modern Love, Fashion, Fame. I'm trying to guess the set list. I mean,
Young Americans was one of his biggest hits.
Yeah,
those were his biggest. You just named his.
Fame was his biggest hit.
Fame was his biggest hit?
That was the number one single.
Was that bigger than Young Americans? That was the number one?
I think so.
Okay, the same album, of course.
Yeah, Changes. Yeah.
Changes, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's for any Bowie fan, this is going to be a perfect night of music. So.
Most of the people in it, of course, are fans, or they wouldn't have signed up.
Oh, absolutely.
And the ones that maybe know less are of the Bowie catalog signed up because they trust everybody else that's in it.
Right.
You know, and they know that this is something that they want to do. But really, it's pretty much... Well, that was one of the things that I realized, you know, when Bowie passed, that almost everybody's a Bowie fan. I mean...
In some degree.
It was really very universal. People, friends of mine from just sort of all different walks of life.
There were so many different Bowies.
Right, because there's a Bowie for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there is.
That's a good line. I like that.
There is. I mean, there's people that love that Berlin trilogy.
Right. One of my favorite
the early
Bowie.
Folk stuff.
I love
the Berlin trilogy.
The Philly soul, the glam.
The glam, of course.
The glam of 84 to 88.
Right. The whole
Tin Machine.
Yeah.
3-year Tin Machine thing. And then, you know, How would I call everything after Black Tie White Noise? I mean,
that's like the mature artist period.
That's the maturity.
Sort of like
reconnecting with Brian Eno.
Reconnecting with some of his more melodic kind of tendencies. Yeah. And I mean, some of the, well, like something like Heathen was sort of like almost like a very cheery album in a way. Well, maybe not. I mean, to me,
I was going to say Reality was a lot more cheery.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But there was something about, I don't know, both of those seemed to be coming back more towards melody and song.
Right.
And pop and that kind of thing.
And then there was also Bowie the Live Performer, which was a whole other plot as you go through his concerts, having seen him, or the video concerts.
I saw Bowie twice myself, in 87 on the Glass Spider tour, and in 90 on the Sound and Vision tour. And it was at what was then Sullivan Stadium.
Right. Mm-hmm. Freezing your butt off.
No, maybe it was actually in September.
Oh, okay.
It was in September. It wasn't bad. I was just way in the nosebleed. Like you could barely see anything with binoculars.
Right. So you were in the vicinity.
Yes. I was in the vicinity. And it took the local band Neighborhoods opened.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And Dave Minahan kept dropping the F-bomb.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, there's kids here, so I shouldn't swear. You know, things like that.
Mr. Paul is so
loving
punk.
This story.
He's so punk, Minahan.
And then I saw him in 90 and Joe Satriani opened.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's okay, that interesting. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I saw him at the... At
and
the,
I was in 13th row for that one.
Oh, nice.
So,
well,
yeah.
There you go. You made up for it.
Oh, I think it was the reality tour, the one where Polyphonic Spree opened.
Okay.
At the Fleet Center. I saw that one. And
the one with 30 singers.
Right. And I was so fortunate because somebody had a ticket in about the 5th row and gave it to me.
Nice.
So I was really like 10 or 15 feet away from him. And the thing that really just killed me about that night was how relaxed he was and how he turned 20,000 people into like 100 people at Passim.
Mm.
He was so intimate with everybody.